It's Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of the eponymously named law firm Harvell and Collins. I've always wanted to use the word eponymous, Cecil, Wes, so thank you for giving me that opportunity. Harvell and Collins, of course, located in Morehead City, and the number, 252 area code 726-9050. And I'll remind you also throughout the program, the website and also via email at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Good afternoon.
So we were talking several weeks back, Cecil, about the top 10 issues associated with estate planning. And we're going to continue that, I gather, today?
Yes, kind of. I do like, even though it's very generic, I do like the title Do's and Don'ts, because there's so many aspects of estate planning that we could address. But these are some things that we just see on a regular basis that we would say to clients, you know, let's do this or let's don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And right out of the gate, Wes, we were talking briefly before the program, and we will go ahead with number six, and we can go back here in a minute or two and review number one through five that we got through at the last program. But number six, I'm going to put on up and take it from number at 9 or 10 and put it up at six, which is that, for heaven's sake, let's know where our original will is. Let's do, if you will, keep track of our original will, because that is what the court is going to require. It is very difficult it certainly is sometimes possible to probate a copy. We do that under certain circumstances, but it right out of the gate, Lockwood, puts the file in the B file versus the smooth and efficient A file. There can be questions about a copy. You know, is it really the last will and testament? Because after all, it's just a copy. Maybe the real one, the original one, has not been located or is lurking around, and this copy is just simply something that was back in history. So where do you keep your original will? Well, we at our firm offer the service of keeping the originals in our vault system. That's almost a program in and of itself. There's so many requirements with regard to that, says the State Bar of North Carolina, but we attempt to maintain all of those requirements, and we do that, and we do that without charge, I might add. If we prepare your documents, then we take on the responsibility of maintaining the originals. And so our clients know that the originals are with the lawyer. We don't mind giving the client the original at all, but if we do, then you need to potentially put it in a very strong place, a lockbox, even a safety deposit box. But for heaven's sakes, let's know where the original happens to be. Wes, why don't you comment a little bit more about this, being that you are wrapped up in a case involving the location of an original will.
Yeah, well, I've been wrapped up in those type cases many times over the years. And, you know, Cecil's right when you say the A file, which is very simple, you know, everything moves forward like it should. That's, you know, a very high percentage of estates that you deal with, because normally you do have the original will, and that's what's required to be put on record and accepted you know, by the clerk of court, and so the probate process can just go forward smoothly. But in the event we don't have the original, if we have a copy, that's the second best thing, but there's a process to go through if we have a copy, and that process is generally referred to as a petition for probate of lost will. There are certain things that you need to prove. You need to bring the witnesses forward. You need to put on evidence, and it's certainly could be contested. So it's somewhat of a mini trial in proving that this copy is the original and is the last will, was executed properly, and those type things.
You know, this brings up a question. If I don't want to get too deep into the woods on this one or the weeds on this one, because there are, you know, four other issues to discuss here when we're talking about the top 10 do's and don'ts of estate planning. But I'm curious, you know, you mentioned, you know, the original, and I'm wondering, are there multiple copies of an original, or is there just one? In other words, obviously, you get affidavit, you get witnesses and things of this nature. So my first question is, can you have multiple copies of an original? And then the other comment, and you alluded to it a moment ago, Wes, and that is on record with the, I guess, the Register of Deeds, Clerk of Court. Where do you register the will?
Right. Well, a couple things to unpack there. I mean, you can have multiple originals. You can have duplicate originals.
Mm-hmm.
That's normally not the way it goes. Normally, when you execute the will, it's the will.
Okay.
It's one document, because each one would stand alone, you know, as the will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can have, when you say copies, certainly you can have copies.
Right.
And, you know, if we have to go through the process of having a copy probated, like I said, it's somewhat of a mini trial, and there's no guarantee that you can, you know, that we'll win that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing this at the time that the person has passed away. So, I mean, we're having to bring in other evidence, to put that on record and hopefully meet the burdens as it relates to where you file it. There is a process here in North Carolina where you can file the will, you know, at the courthouse, and that's kind of a safekeeping type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really my first preference. I like what we do, which is keeping the wills in our vault system.
Right.
I'm just that type of person that, you know, if you're going to do it right, let's do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And because we know how important, you know, that last will and testament is, and that original, we are very careful about who can touch that.
Right.
You know, obviously we can't, if someone passes away and we have someone who's requesting that original will who doesn't have the authority to get it, well, they don't get it.
Okay.
You know, we're normally communicating with the named executor,
mm-hmm.
you know, on that. And then finally, you know, the question about where do you file it? This would be after the person passes away, and then there's the process for the will to then be put on record. When we say on record, that means submitted to the court, normally with the application for the estate to be opened and for the personal representative, the executor, to be appointed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the process we refer to as probate, where, and that's done with the clerk of court. Normally in the county where the person resided at death. I mean, it could be in other places. I mean, there's statutory requirements. It could be where they own property, those type things. But normally if we have, for example, you know, a local Carteret County resident, then clearly it's going to be in Beaufort at the Carteret County Courthouse before the clerk of court and the estates division. So that's, you know, three or four elements there that you brought up with that question that, relatively short answers for that.
We're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. That was Wes Collins a moment ago. Mm-hmm. Harvell and Collins, and Cecil and Wes are continuing a conversation on the top 10 do's and don'ts of estate planning. And of course, we just heard from both Cecil and Wes, but the whole process of maintaining access to the original will. All right.
Correct.
That's number All six.
Right. Uh-huh. One more thing I would mention, since Cecil brought it up, is that it's important, in my opinion, not only to, you know, have the original will, you know, with your attorney or somewhere in, you know, safekeeping, safe deposit box, so on and so forth. You've got to let your loved ones know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the event that Cecil Harvell is the estate attorney and he did the documents, well, give your family members a card.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell, or whoever your attorney is, because they're going to have a record of that. They may not have the original, depending on who your attorney is, but they would at least have a record of it. They would have at least a copy if there's a problem with regard to finding the original.
All right.
We're dealing with a case right now, not to get into too much detail, but this was a multi-state resident person who owned property in multiple states, and she died prematurely. She had a will. We have evidence that she had a will, but one of her residences was New York, and you know how many lawyers there are in New York. We have no idea where the original will is or was. We have a pretty good idea where it may have been, and we have a pretty good idea that someone who didn't like the contents of that will accessed the home soon after death, found it, and destroyed it. So now we're in a process, or we have been in a process, of trying to determine what attorney prepared it. Well, we've been unsuccessful thus far. You know, when there's thousands of lawyers that could have prepared it, and there may be a copy out there somewhere sitting in, you know, a file somewhere in some law firm in New York, that's kind of needle in the haystack to a certain degree.
You know,
and not only is it needle in the haystack, these attorneys and law firms, they're, in many cases, they're pretty guarded about those things. Mm-hmm. They might not even talk to us about it. So we're quite a challenge here to deal with this relatively large estate where we know, you know, that there was a will and we think that we're almost certain that it was destroyed. And now we're in the process of trying to find a copy, and you know, if there had been information provided to the family, this is where it is. You know, this is kept with my attorney. This is my attorney's name. I have a
Lockwood,
copy.
We could just go on each of these do's and don'ts. You know, we could just go on and on. In other words, you know, and I know we've got to move forward, but what Wes is talking about is so important.
It is
that we know, you know, where in the world would the original will even be? The family members and or loved ones need that. And then a copy. Well, isn't it interesting? And we do need to move on, Lockwood,
right.
But what is a copy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just would not realize what we have to deal with in terms of, you know, people will pull out a letter from the lawyer, you know,
right.
Dear so-and-so, please find and close copies of your last will and testament. And then we look at them, and then the client is flabbergasted. They aren't signed. They aren't
right.
The signed copy with the date, with the three witnesses or two witnesses,
mm-hmm.
with the notary. They are a copy of nothing.
Wow.
You see. So a copy, let's be specific here to our listeners. A copy needs to conform exactly to the original.
Mm-hmm.
And we deal with this all the time.
Wow.
where the copy that is presented to us or the copy that is made is not conforming, okay?
Right.
So please make sure that your copy is the copy of the original, page by page, paragraph by paragraph, signed, sealed, delivered, dated, notarized, all of those things, and that will be a huge benefit. All right, the next two, Lockwood, we can take pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do use percentages in our last will and testament and or trust, and not specific numbers.
Uh-huh.
Let's don't say $100,000
right.
to each of my grandchildren, or $200,000 to child A, child B, and child C. Let's use percentages,
mm-hmm.
because we never know exactly what amounts of monies we're going to have, and what form they're in. Maybe the $200,000 is in the form of, you know, an investment in real estate that was made, a lot that was bought, a condominium in the mountains, okay? Let's divide the estate as much, if at all possible, based on percentages.
Yeah.
And not specific numbers. Okay? All right, another do. This is more of a don't. Let's don't worry about the spelling of names
really?
And the middle initials of our of our wonderful female sex right. in the world.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, our ladies that we dearly love, you know, their names change.
Right.
Some of the daughters take their maiden name as their initial. Some of them keep their original middle name.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like my daughter is Elizabeth Ann. She maybe will keep the Elizabeth Ann, the
right.
total name. And then also when they get married, their name changes.
Good point.
So we have clients that, you know, call and we of course are, you know, we're glad to help them, but they're panicked over the fact that the name of their child
uh-huh.
has changed for whatever reason. Maybe the middle initial, maybe the last name because of a divorce or a remarriage, all of those kinds of things. What we can say here, Lockwood, which Wes is the litigator, would of course agree with, is that we know the children, or maybe it's a grandchild, or maybe even if it's a close family friend or neighbor, but we know this person in relationship to the testator,
uh-huh.
the person who is making the will. So, you know, if their name is a little bit different, then I wouldn't, you know, panic about it. Now, of course, with this said, we're very careful in attempting to get the names proper from the beginning, and we do a very good job at that at our law firm. We check them from a multiple of sources. You'd be surprised, Lockwood, how many parents do not know the name of their children.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And our paralegal is tasked with and is instructed to always check through Lexis and other sources and see that the names are appropriate. Yep, parents don't know the names of their children. They get them confused, first name, middle name, you know, it just is very interesting. But the bottom line is that we try to get it right out of the gate just as perfect as we can.
Uh-huh.
But if for some reason your daughter's name changes and she remarries, I don't think that you have to panic about it. Because the bottom line is that we will know that name in relationship to the parent, to the testator of the will.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. That was Cecil Harvell just a moment ago here on Let's Talk Legal. And I want to remind you, as we talk about the top 10 do's and don'ts of estate planning, I would commend to you Harvell and Collins Law Firm. By the way, the phone number 252 area code 726-9050 or online at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. You know, a moment ago, Cecil, you're talking about the issue of using percentages and also the details of spelling names. And that does refer back to one of the items I was thinking about in the earlier conversation with you about, you know, the details. There are certain details, as Wes pointed out, related to, you know, the facts of the estate, but that we have to concern ourselves with. But obviously, there are other details that are not that important, as you just pointed out. And the spelling of a last name, or if you will, the use of a last name, because there is the ability to track the family relationship, is there not? I mean, that's
exactly
okay.
That's exactly correct.
Okay, that's
so.
There's
case law in our state that, you know, we interpret the will by its four corners. We look at all of mm-hmm. the facts and circumstances
right.
concerning the testator of the will, the maker of the will, the document that they've signed under notary with two witnesses is required by law in North Carolina. And so when you look at the four corners of the will and you look at the intent and the testamentary plan of action set forth by the testator, then clearly, you know, whether it's, you know, Patricia Ann or Ann Patricia or, mm-hmm. you know, Patricia Ann Jones versus Patricia Ann Smith, she's a daughter. And
right.
we know that mom and dad only had the one Patricia Ann. And so we're able to feel comfortable with that.
I think one of the things on the list should be don't get frozen with the details as well.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes people think, okay, well, I really need to go meet the attorney. I need to go sit down with him and get all this done, but I haven't finished my list yet.
Right, right.
I don't have all the kids' names written out.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the grandkids' names written out. I don't have my account numbers together. And then they don't do anything.
Mm.
And then, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let the lack of detail freeze you. Just go sit down with the attorney. The attorney's going to get the information he needs from you, or she needs from you.
Yeah, and that's exactly correct. And Wes, that was that. And I know you don't have the list in front of you, but that is on the list, number four. And that's a really good one to review, Lockwood. Let your good attorney guide you through the process.
Uh-huh.
Make your appointment. The appointment initially with most attorneys on estate planning is a consult, which there's no charge for a consultation. Let the attorney, let his or her staff lead you through some of the acquisition of the details, okay? To wait until you have everything in order,
mm-hmm.
you know, reams of paperwork, all copied, ready to give to the lawyer, all of that is just not necessary for the attorney to be able to begin the process. So that's a very good point. Don't procrastinate because you are thinking that you just don't quite have it all organized yet.
Good point. No, it's a very good point. A lot of people are thinking, well, I've got to get to this. I got to get started. Whereas really the best place to start is seriously giving you a call. And that, by the way, is I'm going to remind everyone, for Harvell and Collins, that number, easy number to remember, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, start with a phone call. All right, don't get frozen into non-action, because as we've talked about this in the past, failure to have a will creates a catastrophe for all of the bereaved family members. All right, we're talking about the top 10 do's and don'ts with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins at Harvell and Collins. All right, that was number 8, and number 9 was, of course, we haven't gotten to number 9, but what would be number 9 on that list?
Okay, number 9 is a discussion about what we lawyers call the teacups. We all have personal, tangible property. Now, tangible property are things, Lockwood, that we can pick up and touch, okay?
Yeah, right.
Tangible property is not bank accounts. It's not a stock. It's not a U.S. savings bond, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it has to be something that we can pick up and move about. You know, usually things like, you know, guns and china and watches.
Silverware.
Silverware, things of that nature,
uh-huh.
okay? At our office, we recommend that the maker of the will write out in their own handwriting a memo relative to where they want these things to go, or these important family heirlooms, if you will, or how they want that to be processed by their executor. And we do not put these details about guns and, you know, a piece of jewelry, strands of pearls, you know, a particular set of china, detailed in the last will and testament. It's always fun to look at some really old ones from hundreds of years ago. They're out and about, and, you know, that kind of detail was all put in the will at that time. But we don't want that kind of detail in the will at this point, because it will require that there be receipt and acknowledgement of each and every one of those items. You can only imagine how cumbersome that can become. Also, the devil might be in the details in terms of, well, what happens if the item can't be found? Okay, it's already been given away, or maybe the maker of the will sold it. Also, what if the person that's mentioned that's to receive it is no longer living? We have a file like that in our office right now, but there's no further terminology in the memorandum about what happens if someone, if the person who's to receive that particular item is not living. So you then maybe fall into the residuary clause in the will, is our interpretation on that. But again, let's write these things out in our own handwriting. There's something about it, it being in the handwriting of mom or dad or grandma, that is kind of affirming, that legally makes the document, according to estates and trust law, authentic. because it's in the handwriting of the maker of the will, and so the authenticity of the document is more solid than it would be if it's a typewritten document. A typewritten document on a computer, then anyone could have typed it up and put it before grandmama to sign, you see. At that point, maybe we would like to see a notary if it's going to be done in that kind of way. But we recommend that people just write it out in their own handwriting, these things, and then we put it in the will. The will then references this memorandum of writing and requests that the executor do their best to honor it. And the language is exactly that, Lockwood. The language is that I want my executor to honor it almost, if you will, as best as they can. Because, again, sometimes these items are not to be found. They've already been given to a beneficiary. And so we need to give our executors some flexibility here. Again, that we want them to honor the four corners of the document and the testamentary intent. But we also want to breathe into the situation a little bit of flexibility when it comes to, you know, teacups. Because we might not be able to divide, you know, 10... into the number of beneficiaries.
No, exactly what you're talking about. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins on the issue of the top 10 do's and don'ts. Cecil, very quickly, and to your comment earlier, just a few moments ago, Wes, about being frozen into non-action because I haven't put that list together. Still, even though I know I've got 50 cars, I'm a car collector, and I need to distribute those cars to my children or grandchildren, that should not hold me up from picking up the phone and calling 252-726-9050 and saying, I need to talk to someone about a will. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. Frankly, you know, I think back to when I started practicing, and you know, my inclination was, okay, I'm a new lawyer, and it seems logical to me that before my client comes in and sits down to talk with me about their will or their trust or their power of attorney, whatever it may be, they need to have their ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. They need to have their things in order. Well, Cecil pretty much in short order taught me otherwise.
Okay.
Because he had, you know, he was however many years ahead of me and had the experience he had with regard to that. And that is probably some of the best advice I ever got from him.
Okay.
Because us attorneys, we can gather what we need from the client by simply sitting across the table from the client and asking the questions.
Right.
Even if the client has done, or the proposed client, possible client, prospective client, may have done nothing to prepare.
Okay.
I mean, not a thing. But I have seen situations before where folks, they just aren't really willing to go forward and do anything with their estate planning because they want to delay until they get something in their mind organized with regard to these details. And that normally is a mistake. That's normally like a personality quirk.
Right.
It's normally like, oh, I can't, you know, pack my bag until I have every single piece of clothes that I have washed and folded and in front of me. And, you know, that's kind of that sometimes ends up with folks not ever getting their documents done.
I think is an important aspect of this because I'm confident, and I know we've got to do item number 10 here, and I apologize for making this observation, but I'm confident that a lot of people are saying, I just don't have all my material together. As you just heard Wes Collins say, go to the attorney, initiate the conversation immediately.
We even hear, Lockwood, sometimes folks will say, well, I just couldn't quite get in here to get this all settled until, you know, the relationship with my daughter and her husband kind of improved a little bit. Or, you know, until my grandchild got through college. You know, people really do have a tendency to wait for the perfect situation with the perfect document with the perfect relationships in the family.
Right.
And Lockwood, in terms of number 10, we can do that next week or some week here soon, and then just very quickly go through all 10 once again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But that is number 10. There is no perfect estate plan, Lockwood. There is no perfect plan of action. Things happen, circumstances. Right. Everyone is subject to the twists and turns of life. So let's get the best plan we can. Mm-hmm. Let's get it 99.9% of the way there. Let's hope for that. But I am here to tell you that in having done, you know, thousands of these at this point, there's no perfection, okay? There's always, well, but what if?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I'm not real sure about that,
right.
But I guess that's the best we can do. And better to get, you know, a plan of action in effect that gets us, as I say, 99.9% of the way there than to keep waiting and waiting and waiting for certain, you know, outside events in life to occur. It's just a fact of life. Again, Lockwood, you know, life is complicated,
right.
Isn't it?
Well, you know, this leads to the conclusion of the do's and don'ts. Do seek out a lawyer to prepare your last will and testament, regardless of the size of your estate. Do seek out an attorney, and don't delay. Those are the two do's and don'ts, Cecil. Wes, am I correct on that?
You are. Absolutely.
All right. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this afternoon here on Let's Talk Legal. I've got a feeling that conversation about estate planning is going to continue again, and I want to thank you both for being with us. HarvellandCollins.com. Spell out the word and, please. HarvellandCollins.com. Or give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050. Wes, Cecil, thanks for your time.